The education, our E-12 Education Finance Committee will come to order. And we have several proposals this morning to look at. And I was looking at my agenda for today, just my, the committee agenda, and I think there are like 35 different pieces of legislation that we're going to have to listen to, not only just in the education committee, but in the other committees. So there'll be a lot of seat time, I think, today. I think we'll start with Senator Bonhoff. And is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, because I don't see Senator Salzman or...
She was going to chair.
Oh. And then we can, as other people come, we'll get to it. This is Senate File 352. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. So I'm here today to present Senate File 352, and this is a very straightforward bill. This bill just stipulates that there will be a 3% increase on the general formula. And with me today, I have three witnesses, three testifiers, and they are Scott Krunquist, Brad Lundell, and Sam Walseth.
They can join you up at the table.
And members, just some rationale for this approach. We know that school districts are hurting in so many different ways. We've been traveling all over the state, and school districts are, we've had the special ed presentations, and we know that that is a huge drain on the budgets. We know that the rising cost of energy, the costs with regard to ELL, and the bottom line is that the class sizes all over this state are far greater than what works for optimum teaching and learning. And so we think that by putting money, and frankly, I wish I was offering a bill for 6% on the formula. So this is just a way to say, you know, given the resources we have and all the things we want to accomplish, this is a very conservative request for basically covering inflation. So with that, I'll start with Scott.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Mr. Krunquist?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Scott Krunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. AMSD enthusiastically supports the 3% formula bill sponsored by Senator Bonhoff, and we very much appreciate her bringing that forward. It's no secret, members, that the taking care of the basics is really essential for school districts. We know you've already had a long discussion about special education and how important it is to fund that formula. Likewise, it's important to provide at least an inflationary increase on the basic formula. The formula really is the engine that drives the educational car, so to speak. Anytime we fail to make progress or fail to keep up with inflation, districts need to reallocate, need to reshuffle their budgets, make cuts. And so this, as Senator Bonhoff said, is really just asking for an inflationary increase on the basic formula. And we really hope that the Senate will strongly consider it and make progress on this front. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Krunquist. And maybe after Mr. Walseth testifies, we can talk a little bit about the inflation rate and whether this is kind of where, you know, how that fits into that kind of given rate.
And Mr. Chair, also, I have the superintendent of Wayzata Schools and the business manager who are here for other reasons, but so if you have any direct questions, they would be able to answer from that perspective.
Okay. Mr. Walseth.
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We're here today to support Senator Bonhoff's bill. I'd just basically be reiterating a lot of the comments by Mr. Krunquist. I've been informed by a lot of rural superintendents that over the last 4 years, when we went 0-0 and then 4-4, That was very problematic. And even if we had just gone 2-2, 2-2 over that same time period, that would be more revenue and stable revenue over that same time period. So we need to have, as Mr. Kernquist indicated, we need to have some basic inflation in the basic formula allowance, because that is the driver and the core infrastructure of the education backbone. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll just keep my comments very brief and reiterate a lot of what Mr. Kernquist said today. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have others, Senator Bonhoff, to testify or on the?
And Brad Lundell does not appear. Did you want to say something with regard to inflation? It's unexpected. Alan Hopeman, our business manager, state your name for the record.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alan Hopeman. I'm Director of Finance and Business for Wayzata Public Schools, District 284. I just would echo what Mr. Kernquist stated. Our costs are they go up every year. We can't repeal the laws of inflation, and gas in particular is staying pretty high. They've come down a little bit this winter, but next winter's fuel prices for natural gas we're looking at $10 gas again. That's what the futures are right now. And the big costs, of course, are labor costs, the cost is going up, and it's actually probably greater than 3% nationally if you look at labor market costs. So we would certainly appreciate some help, and I know I speak not just for Wayzata schools, but for all the school districts in the state, that we really could use some help here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Brad Lundell is now here.
Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, catch my breath. But I like this bill. And C likes this bill as well. And I think that I'm sure that everything been said here today is clearly the truth. I think this is a bill. We've all worked together very closely this year, probably more closely than we have in the past. Putting money on the formula is always a good thing, and it's the engine that drives the school funding throughout the state, and I think it's I would like to thank Senator Bonhoff for introducing this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lindley. Could I ask where, if this is creating a scenario now, if there was a given amount of money, would it be better to put it on the formula or put it in special ed?
Mr. Chair,
I hate to put your feet to the fire, but
I will let my the people I'm with give their opinion, but I just would have to say, from going around the state, that if I had a pot of money, I might say split it, special ed on the formula. And I don't think that's the answer you want to hear, but the reason why I say that is because everybody's got the cross-subsidy issue, and everybody needs that help so much. And there are school districts who have needs that that are beyond that, and so that gives them some stability in their ongoing costs.
Okay, one for splitting it.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Alan Hopeman again. I guess I would say that I think speaking for myself, and I think speaking for many other district business managers, would really like to see the special ed deficiency, if you will, the shortfall in special ed, see that gap get closed. And the reason I'd rather see money go there first is that if there's 3% on the formula, but the special ed inflation factors aren't changed, we're not really getting 3%. We're probably getting 2.5%. And that, we lose that 0.5% every year as our special ed costs go up statewide, and we've seen that happen now for 3 or 4 years running. So I think it gives a truer picture as we're bargaining with our employee groups and as we're going to the public to make a case for more money if a referendum is up. Then it gives a truer picture of what we really have received, what we really are able to work with.
Okay, is that answer, that's special ed, so we have one for split, one for special ed. Mr. Kronquist?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Kronquist.
Get the count first, Senator
again.
Olson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would go along with what Mr. Holtman said. If we had to rank them, we would rank special education, and in particular, the legislation that Senator Rummel is carrying that would recognize those special ed costs in the current year as well. And really, for the reasons that Mr. Holtman outlined, we think it's more honest to the public. As he indicated, if we don't fund special ed, really that formula money part of it is just going to go to special ed anyway. But yet you're going to have perception in the public that this new money was appropriated for the basic formula for other programming. And so we think that's a key reason to support funding that special ed first. But again, obviously, money on the formula is also important. And so our wish is that we could do both. But if we have to rank them, Mr. Chairman, I would rank special ed number one.
Mr. Walsa?
Mr. Chairman and members, the Minnesota Rural Education Association Board and Legislative Committee met about a week and a half ago, and we talked specifically about starting to prioritize because we knew what the budget forecast was going to be and what kind of inflationary type of resources you're looking at having this session. And we concur with what Mr. Kronquist and what Mr. Holtman have testified today, that special ed, the deficiency in special ed is just way too far behind, that we can't make progress in expanding or supporting other programs for students until we really start taking care of the special education costs in this state. Our districts have too big of a cross subsidy. It's just too hard to do other things in terms of general ed programming or gifted and talented that we should be doing for all kids. But we need more solid state support for special education. I think Senator Rummel's bill, and there were a whole host of bills. I think Senator Scheid had a really good bill too. And so some kind of combination of those pieces of legislation would be very, very helpful. And those are the top priorities for MREA this year.
Okay. Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm concurring with everyone today, which is rare. I would say that, generally in our organization, we have very wide distribution. Some folks would obviously rather see money on the formula than special ed, but I think that the nature of the beast has been, as has been outlined here, that the four and four last year, I think in one district that I represent, really translated to less than 1% in each year because of the special ed cross subsidy. They have very high cross subsidy, and I represent some districts with some of the highest cross subsidies in the state. I would say then that clearly for us the needle on the gauge is pointing towards special ed. So I think that as everyone here has said, special ed is probably the place that we would like to see the money go this year as well.
Okay, thank you. Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I apologize that the night that you had all of the special education bills, Senator Bonhoff and I had to be out in Minnetonka, and so we missed some of the hearing, many of the details of these bills. But just on reflection of, am I accurate in saying that even if we restored or elevated the percentage of the funding that we give and for special ed, it doesn't necessarily eliminate the cross subsidy, all of it. It may reduce it, but it doesn't eliminate it. So I think there's a need in both places. If we are in fact we need to be able to increase the formula, because that impact varies by district on the impact of special ed. So you need some help on the special ed side, but you do need formula, I think, just to keep up with hopefully not just the subsidy, but the changes and needs within the regular program.
Mr. Chair, if I could add to that
Would Mr. Lundell agree with that by any chance? Because I suspect he might not be agreeing with my bill coming up.
Oh. Madam Chair, I just have to be agreeable before I can get disagreeable. I have to get my zen in order here, my karma. Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that, we've got districts, Joy and Dorsher just joined us from St. Cloud, and they have an extremely high cross subsidy. And even with the Rummel bill, there still are some districts that are going to sit out there and have extremely high cross subsidies. And I think that as we move and we put this money together, we have to look at those kinds of districts that are still having extreme problems. I know that Senator Clark put it as a bill, Senate File 1450, I believe, that you'll probably be hearing, that talks about that. And I think that, we can't as we put these things together, we have to realize that there are going to be some places that are that still need special attention.
I think if we'd give them a second choice, they'd probably kind of balance it out. But I was asking for their, if you couldn't divide it, you know, which way would you go with it? So, Senator Wiergan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. In some ways, I'm a little bit surprised, especially from the School Boards Association. Mr. Kronquist, when I look at funding for education, and granted, I've never been on a school board and I've never been a teacher, so take it with a grain of salt. But when I look at putting money into education from a school board's perspective and from general funding, I would think that having an amount of money that's flexible, which formula money is flexible, as opposed to amount of money that's pigeonholed and you can't use it for anything else, to me, as a board of directors, and I've served on some boards, that would seem the preferable way to do it, because then the school could allocate where it fits best. I mean, you can do special ed funding with general ed money, and it's the same pot of money. So you can say it ends up 2.5 on the formula instead of 3 on the formula, and I understand where you're getting that, but the dollar amount is the same, and you lose entirely the flexibility when it's all special ed.
Mr. Chairman. Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the committee, Scott Kronquist. And just to clarify, I'm not speaking for the School Board Association. I'm speaking for the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. If we did not have a huge cross-subsidy, I think I would agree with your assessment. But the reality is right now, money in special education is really very much the same as money on the formula, because right now we are having to spend so much out of our general education dollars on special education. And the other point, I'll just reiterate that I mentioned previously, we really think the kind of the truth in budgeting is an important concept here. And Mr. Walsh, I think, referred to it. Last biennium, there was 4 and 4 in the formula. And the perception in the public was that was indeed a 4% increase, you know, in each year on the formula. And in reality, that's not what happened. A big chunk of that in each year had to go towards special education because, as you know, we're mandated to provide those services. And so we think we run into credibility problems then with the public. When the public hears numbers that don't translate into reality for school officials, and when they then have to go out and try to pass referendums, because, as you know, that's also still an essential part of school funding, you have problems. You're trying to explain to the public, we got 4%, but it really was more like 2.5%, and then the public starts saying, oh, yeah, sure, yeah, we've heard this before. And so that's why we think it's so important to honestly fund special education, so we have some credibility with the public and we're able to go out there and talk in terms that everyone, we're all on the same page, I guess.
Senator, we're going to follow up?
Well, yeah, a couple, actually. Well, I'll skip that one. So, Mr. Oslin, you mentioned that with negotiations, you'd rather see it on special ed. So you're telling me that when you go into negotiations, your teachers say, oh, the special ed money is special ed. We won't even think about that when we talk about negotiations. They actually separate that out?
Madam Chair, Senator Wiergan, that's not exactly what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we have a shortfall in special ed funding. The formula is not fully funded, and each year that shortfall grows. And we have to cover that shortfall anyway. So because we have to cover that shortfall, it's coming out of the increase in the basic formula. That's the only place it can come from. And so that means that the money that we have in the basic formula to fund teacher salary increases, natural gas costs, whatever, is less than what it appears to be. Because we have this growing problem in the special ed formula. The special ed formula is supposed to provide us with 69% of the salary, but that's prorated now at below 80%. So we're really only getting about 57-58% of the teacher's salary special ed funding, and the rest of that has to come out of the basic formula. So I guess that's what I'm saying. I hope I'm making myself clear. So, I mean, negotiations with our bargaining groups, if they believe that we got 3%, I mean, they're going to believe that they ought to get at least 3% on their negotiations. But other things being equal, but if we really don't have 3% that we can flexibly spend, then we can make a different case for it.
Madam Chair,
Senator Worthen,
just one more, Mr. Oslin. You said if you get 3%, then the teachers want that 3% in their contract. The teachers I know are pretty smart people, and they know that heating costs and everything and textbooks go up too. So I don't know how that translates perfectly.
Mr. Holtman?
Madam Chair, Senator Worthen, I guess I wouldn't say that it is a one-to-one relationship, but I think when the bargaining units do believe that the district has gotten an increase that's to cover inflation, that they believe that they are that they're, I wouldn't say entitled, but that they have a good case to make for getting some of that. And I just think it gives a truer picture of what we actually have in resources available to cover the increased cost of the district, whatever they are, if we don't have this growing deficit in the special ed formula. Special ed is the second largest state aid component. The largest, of course, is the basic formula, but special ed is second for across the state, and for our district, I'm sure for virtually every district. And when that formula is not fully funded, it leaves a big hole in our budgets.
Senator Saltzman, do you still have a question?
I will pass. Thank you. I think that they answered.
Are there any other?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to add to Senator Worthen's question. There are districts out there now that are passing referenda to take care of special ed cross subsidy, and that gets to be a very, very difficult thing to sell to the public. And so I think that, you know, I'm an old truth in formula person, and I think that, you know, we really have to, make all the formulas work the way they're supposed to work. And I think special ed clearly isn't working right now.
Senator Worthen.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lundell, you maybe shouldn't have added that because it brought up one more question. Mr. Kronquist talked about clarity and being truthful with the public. I have never seen an operating referendum say this is for special education.
Madam Chair, Senator Worthen, they may not be saying that, but that's what's happening.
Well, Madam Chair, that was my point. Mr. Kronquist was talking about clarity and truthfulness. Well, if that's the case, the public should know it.
Are there any other questions or comments? We do have a quorum, so Senator Bonhoeff, if you would like. Oh, is there? Excuse me.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Solberg with the Lake Superior Area School Districts. I just wanted to say something in defense of Senator Bonhoeff's bill. I don't disagree with what everyone has said here about the special ed costs and truth in budgeting. I just wanted to make the point that there might still be some concerns about putting all of the funding in special education. To the detriment of the formula amount, Mr. Holtman mentioned, we've been getting behind on special education in terms of in every year of that percentage getting further and further behind. But that's also true with the formula amount, and every year, I mean, if we do special ed, which we know we can't fund entirely unless there's more funding made available, and we keep doing that entirely, and I'm not sure what the implications are in terms of maintenance of effort on that either. Then if we come in next year or the year after and say we want some money on the formula, we're starting from a much lower base there too, so there probably does need to be some balance.
Thank you, Mr. Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Solberg.
Yes. I think that some of us here would, I think, also recognize the fact that our numbers in special ed are growing is an added complication. some of us would like to think that there's some ways that we could be doing something differently, particularly in the literacy area, that may help reduce that growth in the learning disabled or learning difficulties, and ultimately possibly affect some in the emotional and behavioral, if in fact they are linked to those things. And if we just fed totally the special ed without keeping some of that pressure on, we might not recognize that there is something that we can in fact do there. So I hope that we can continue to work toward that end as well. I was reminded of a comment my dad used to make. For those of you who are agriculture, and there's a couple illustrations of it. He says, you know, if a farmer is losing $25 an acre on his corn — we don't lose money on corn now with ethanol, but he said usually what they do is plant more acres, try to make it up. And I've heard the illustration is that if a baker is losing 5 cents on a loaf of bread, he just makes more bread. Well, you keep losing more money. So I'm not saying that to infer that districts are purposefully putting more people into special ed, but if there's anything that we can in fact do, if you keep putting more in and we aren't able to keep up with what we have, it is going to make complications even worse. So hopefully we can keep some pressure on both fronts and get some help this time around. Senator Worgen.
Madam Chair, to your point, I really hope that something is included in the education omnibus bill that goes towards Senator Scheid's bill.
Yes.
I just happen to think she has one of the best ideas in this committee with the intensive help in kindergarten and first grade, those real low grades.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, just in closing, one of the things that I think we all have to be careful of is pitting our regular parents against our special ed parents. And so however we end up dividing this pot, I think that we have as an obligation as an education community, everyone at the table and all of us, to make sure we're communicating clearly that this is for all students, and that in fact if we do put most of our resources towards the special ed, that we're doing that out of our commitment for all students. Mm-hmm. And I think that will be a public relations challenge.
Thank you, Senator Bonham. Would you like to make a motion?
I move Senate File 352 be laid over for possible inclusion in the education omnibus bill.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Since Senator Saltzman, we'll send you next, since Senator Sumpf isn't here and I have a responsibility. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am here today to discuss Senate File Number 368, which is a bill that provides greater equalization for equity transition and referendum revenue programs. I have worked with a number of the education groups for the past few years on the PS Minnesota model, which talks about reform in how we fund our schools that would provide for less reliance on a referendum to fund our schools. But under our current system, as we have seen this past fall, school districts, in order to access the revenue that they need to provide a high-quality education, continue to have to go to voters. Now, I just want to give you examples of two different districts. Imagine that there are two different districts. They both want to decrease class sizes, buy new textbooks, invest in their schools, and they both need about the same amount of money. But when it comes time to go to their voters and to ask their voters to pass a levy, the impact on a similarly valued home is maybe twice the amount in one district versus the other. And that's because one district happens to have a higher commercial industrial base, or whatever the issue is, has higher property wealth. So one group of citizens are asked to pay twice as much, perhaps, or even more in order to fund their schools. It's not an issue that one community values education schools more than the other, but it has to do with is that ability to pay there. So this bill starts to look at how we equalize our operating levy. And I think what's important here to note is that with the current system, if we continue to rely on referendums to fund our schools, we need to make it a more fair playing field. And that requires property wealth. It's not additional dollars to schools, but it helps to leverage those particular dollars. With me today is Brad Lindell, who is with Schools for Equity in Education. We have both worked for 10 years on this issue. And I just want to, again, just sort of educate this committee on the importance of equalization. But again, I think when we look at school reform, I hope in general that we move away from reliance on levies to fund our schools and move away from property taxes to do that. But in the meantime, I think if that's the route we continue to go, this program is very essential.
Mr. Lundell?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator Saltzman has outlined this issue very, very well, and I think that I've worked for 16 years on this issue, or 20 years. And I think that what we've seen and what has happened is that the equalizing factors have stayed static for the last 13 years. There's been no change in the equalizing factors, and as property wealth has grown throughout the state, there's been other changes with the taking of the ag land off the referendum market value base and seasonal recreational property off that base as well, that some districts are really at a disadvantage now compared to other districts as they fall off equalization. I think that even though property wealth is growing, you're seeing the old disparity happen, especially in the metropolitan area, between districts with lower levels of property wealth and districts with higher levels of property wealth. I think that and tax equalization or tax equity needs to be part of the system as long as the property tax is going to be a part of the education funding system. So we really support Senator Saltzman's efforts. We support the efforts of many on this committee who have introduced bills on equalization. Certainly hope that I know that Senator Bach was just out in the hallway. I wish that he could come in and hear this as well so I could save a meeting. But I guess the thing is we really do need to look at this issue. It's an issue that's gone untended for quite a while, and as Senator Saltzman said, again, I think in the long run, we need to move away from levies, or at least this kind of proliferation of levies, and get to some, but somehow keep the stability of the property tax in the system. But right now, we're living in a system where we need to have the adjustments because we just can't get from here to there without some raises, without some increase in equalization.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Lindell. Are there any questions that members have?
There is a cost on this, Mr. Chair, if I might note. The fiscal note says that, to do this kind of reform, and maybe Mr. Nauman wants to clarify this, it's about $140 million. Perhaps he can explain this better than I can, but this is based on current market value. And as we've seen, the issue with referendum equalization is that when we set something in 1993, we all know that home values have just continued to climb. So for some people to say, well, districts are falling off of equalization, we must have fixed the problem, is not the case, in that all property values have gone up and there still is a disparity on how each district, what the cost is to a homeowner in a similar valued home. So perhaps, Mr. Nauman, if you could explain how that impacts the fiscal note as home values would climb, that the amount of state aid would perhaps drop.
Mr. Nauman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, we actually did not request a fiscal note on this and instead opted to model this on ourselves given that some of the burdens that we've placed on the department with all the fiscal note requests this year. So what we did was model a fiscal 09 impact of the bill and came up with about a $140 million increase in aid and a comparable reduction in levies for all the components of the bill. We just carried that number forward based on pupil counts. What it does not show, the number on the tracking sheet here, And I should emphasize that the levies should be shown on that sheet as negatives. It was late last night, and I think I forgot the negatives. what it doesn't show is the impact of the changing property values over time. So what you could anticipate is that some of those numbers would adjust as you go forward due to the higher property values that are built into the assumptions in the property basis.
Mr. Lindell?
Mr. Chair, if I could ask Senator Nauman, ask Mr. Nauman, does your projection incorporate anticipated increases from districts in use of referendum, or is it just a static measure of what's out there now?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lindell, at midnight, we just did a simple straight line projection. The number that I have the most confidence in is the 09 number.
Okay.
To the extent that the committee would be interested in proceeding down this route with adjustments and equalizing factors, we would remodel this, and I would anticipate that the costs would be higher due to the changing property values.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add that, you know, we really, you know, there's some folks here that are on the tax committee, and I really think that we just have to continue. This is a tax issue as much as it is an education issue. I mean, there's this, you know, link between the two. But to the extent that this money can come out of the tax target or be part of the property tax relief efforts that the Senate will be going on to this year, really would be appreciated by the entire school community, because I think that oftentimes these programs get pitted against special ed and the general ed kinds of efforts, and I think that that's probably to some extent they have to match up, but in another extent they do work toward ends that are complementary but that are still exclusive of each other.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if you could walk through, since I think the equity revenue with its different levels in different areas of the state and the different numbers you apply, which is certainly tied to referendum. How could you walk through how this, what impact this has on that? The equity revenue is obviously largely levy, and not just the aid from the state. Can you walk through what this change will do to that full formula, or are you leaving that in place?
I think maybe Mr. Nauman might be able to step us through that.
Oh, you're going to let him off the hook?
Oh, let me off. Keep me on the hook. Mr. Chair, I'm always glad to be on the hook.
Okay, no, that's all right.
Mr. Chair, I think I can handle that. What this does is it will just change the composition of the equity revenue in the same way it will change the composition of the referendum. And same with transition. If this would say you're 50-50 aid levy with your equity revenue, and this would make it 70-30 aid to levy, same thing would happen in the equity revenue. There'd be no change in the level of equity revenue, just a change in the composition between aid and levy.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, it does not have an impact on the equity revenue formula as it stands.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions that members have? I apologize. I had to step out of the room for a little bit. There is a run. I don't know if members have that or have seen that, gone over it. Okay. Looks like this, and is for Senate File 368. So you've gone over that?
Okay. We have not gone over that, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe Mr. Nauman just highlight some things.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a run that's similar to the one that we had last year for a similar bill that made similar changes. Going across, we have the current law equity levy and aid, then referendum levy and aid, transition levy and aid, and then we compute a grand total for each of those components and convert it into a per pupil, and then we make the changes for Senate File 768. And to the extent that Senator Olson, you're interested in the dynamic with equity in particular, for you can compare the current law equity levy and aid to the Senate File 768 aid and levy on equity. And you can notice, as Mr. Lundell spoke to, there's no revenue changes, but you'll see a change in the mix. And that dynamic, as he testified, occurs all the way across in the other two revenue lines. And then in the final right-hand column, we compute an aid difference, the amount of aid that would have to increase, and this is the $140.8 million that we modeled in fiscal 09 that would go up, and the levy would go down an identical amount. That's in the second column from the right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nowen, it was $140 million or $141 million approximately? Or what you said? I thought you said $149. I didn't see that.
If you look on the second column in from the right,
yes,
at the very, very top,
yes,
the 140.8.
Oh, point. You said 0.8. Okay, thank you. That's what I missed. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that you have that wants to testify on the on Senate File 368? If not, Senator Salzman?
I would like to move that Senate File number 368 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the E-12 omnibus bill.
Okay. Senator Salzman's motion. There were no amendments or anything? Okay. If not, on Senator Salzman's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Senator
Members.
Olson, would you want to call?
Okay.
I would just mention that to members that in your budget book, there is a short section right in the very beginning talking about on page 27 relating to the equity formula and there's several others there too, the transition and alternative and so on, but that in that area it's helpful to kind of look that over to see the general education components. Senator Olson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here to present Senate File number 564. Since we are on the subject of equity, this is deals with one little aspect of our current equity formula for determining that revenue that we have. I think we've heard in past years, but some of you may not have been through it before. Senator Bonhoff has, and I co-authored another bill that's introduced this year, too. But you're giving me the chance to defend this time. So what the concern is that addresses this is that in the way the formula is established, there are several different calculations depending on parts of the state. We get divided between the metropolitan area as well as the greater Minnesota, and there's several different calculations that I'm not going to attempt to explain. We have greater experts, either Mr. Lundell or Mr. Noman or Dr. Melcher, that can describe that, because it may be a little bit difficult to grasp. But the one that I think is fairly easy to understand is that on the formulaic part of equity, all districts get $46 per pupil unit. This is a combination of aid and levy, and it's related to their amount of referendum. But this is done in referendum. Up to the 95th percentile, and over the 95th percentile, that aid drops to $23 per pupil. What that creates, it usually is about, given the number of districts and so on, there's about 14 districts in the state that are above that 95th percentile. But they don't know, always know, who they're going to be. And because of the dynamics of a district passing a referendum, it may kick them in so that they are out of that, they're out of their 15th point and into the 14th, and are going to, a year out, lose money that they had counted on receiving or, in fact, were spending. And this, we bring this forward because we believe there's a basic inequity and an unfairness in this particular practice. To say nothing of if you're in that position, wobbling between that 14th and 15th position, I would declare that it is cruel and unusual punishment. And it ultimately punishes the students in the district that then has to figure out rapidly how they're going to make cuts because they've lost revenue. Now, rather than I'm going to have a couple of their districts that have been in that position describe their circumstances, but I just want to note that usually these are districts that do not qualify. They tend to rely more heavily on referendum than other districts because they usually don't qualify for a lot of the add-ons that some districts have to reach their overall revenue. So you'll often find that these districts, in spite of having high referendum, actually may be lower in overall per pupil revenue than many of the other districts that are getting the equity revenue. And they tend to be in the high-cost metro areas. And so you've heard us before asking for some consideration to some of the unusual costs that drive the needs that drive costs in the metropolitan area. And so we feel that it's important that we treat all districts alike, and we understand that part of the challenge of this is that the impact is almost entirely levy. About 91% in this category of revenue is now levy. So that is, but if we're going to be looking at making some changes and dealing similar to what Senator Saltzman is talking about, this may be the time to be considering making this change as well and getting rid of this kind of a cliffhanger punishment that we give to some districts. So I'll stop, and I don't know which of you wishes to go first. Superintendent Oslin from the Wayzata School District will share. Correct my mistakes and share his experience.
Thank you, Senator Olson. It's always a pleasure to have Senator Olson. I've served with you, I think, as long as I've been on the Education Committee. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, we were elected to the Senate the same year.
So it's been quite a few years, and it's nice to have experience. I mean, you have that historical perspective, so it's nice to hear your comments. Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to testify in support of Senator Olson's bill, Senate File 564.
May I ask you before you start your testimony, if you could just give your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bob Ostlund, superintendent of schools in Wayzata. At your place, you do have a handout that we put together with some talking points. Let's run through real quickly, just titled Equity Revenue, Senate File 564. As Senator Olson has mentioned, districts below the 95th percentile, and this is divided. There's a metro area region and there's a outstate region. So it's two separate pots, if you will, of districts that are impacted by this formula. If you're below the 95th percentile, you receive in equity levy authority $13 times 1.25, or $16.25, plus what you got from the old formula. We do not receive anything on that. I don't know a lot about that aspect of it, to tell you the truth, plus the $46 that was mentioned earlier. Now, if you go above that 95th percentile in terms of referendum revenue per pupil, you lose the $23 that Senator Olson talked about, or half of that $46 figure. So at a minimum, a district that goes over the the 95th percentile would lose that $23 plus the $16.25 plus whatever would come out of the old formula. But at a minimum, you're losing about almost $40 per pupil, $39.25. One of the things that's difficult, it takes a very small change to throw you over that cliff. There really is a cliff effect, as Senator Olson says. And those variables that determine whether you're over that 95th percentile or not are not in your control most of the time. If you pass a levy and you're close to that point and you have an inflation factor built in, for example, and your neighbor does not, you might move ahead of them by like $1 per pupil. You see very little extra revenue, but lose a lot because you just happen to hop over them. We're literally in that position with our neighboring district, Minnetonka. And I'll talk about that a little more just briefly. It's a very complicated formula. It has resident students and non-residents built in different ways. So you're less likely to get caught in this cliff if you have a greater number of non-resident pupils attending your district than resident pupils. We have a neighboring district that has a fairly significant higher amount of referendum revenue than we do, but because they have more non-resident pupils attending the district, they're really not in danger of this. So those are variables that no one is totally in control of. There's another major issue in that it's so long after the fact that you know whether you actually got caught with this or not. For example, for the current year, we really won't know until February of 2008 whether or not we were over the 95th percentile for the current year. So you've actually gone through two levies, two budget cycles before you know for sure whether you got hit with this or not. So that is obviously problematic. And we're a perfect case in point. In Wayzata, we actually appear to be below the 95th percentile for this year, but our calculations suggest that we have just barely slipped past Minnetonka through our passing of a levy a year ago in November and also with an inflationary adjustment. That will result in us losing $445,000 in revenue, gaining very small amount and losing $445,000. Interesting to look forward to next year, 2007-2008. Right now, it appears we would be in that position again. However, this past fall, both Roseville and Moundsview passed operating levies. We think that they will both pass us as a result of that. So it's the kind of game you get involved in. And then beyond that, who knows? Actually, I think Roseville did not build an inflation factor, so while they pass us for 1 year, we think they'll fall behind the next year because they don't have an inflation factor and we do. So it gets to be very interesting to try to predict who's in this position and who is not. And I should point out that it's the same thing in Greater Minnesota. There's about a dozen districts in Greater Minnesota that get caught by this, and there's at least another dozen that are on the cliff, and it's the same thing that they have to deal with all across the state. If this bill were to become law, it wouldn't eliminate the problem. That, you know, the $13 issue would still be there, 13 plus, but at least it would mitigate it. Our loss would be $185,000 instead of $445,000. So, in summary, the flaws here are that, you know, a very small change in revenue can result in a large loss in revenue, and that it's so hard to predict, and the variables are out of our control. As Senator Olson has pointed out, it's essentially all levy authority, not state budget funds directly that we're talking about here. So that's what we see with this, and we would urge your support for this legislation. And we thank you, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Superintendent Oslin. It's kind of an interesting, almost a game between the districts out there as to who's going to be on under or over.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I, as he was describing what the volley between the East and the West Metro, I sit on transit Subcommittee of Transportation, and the East Metro has been concerned that the West Metro is getting ahead of them in terms of consideration of transit. Well, now you have a chance to. No, I'm kidding you. Unfortunately, it isn't just a West Metro issue. It's It's a vagary of this formula. And Ms. Grebna is here from the Moundsview School District, and will introduce yourself and tell your story here.
Welcome. If you could give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lori Grivna, and I know on the sheet my superintendent, Jan Watoon, was scheduled to testify this morning. She had a family emergency, so I am here in her place, and I am representing Moundsview. We are the 12th largest school district in the state of Minnesota. However, we also have the distinction of having the highest rate of declining enrollment in the 50 school district metro area. So I'm sure we're going to be rising in that category. I speak before you today on Senate File 564 because we are in this folly now. Our community was very gracious in passing an operating levy last fall. We were one of the few school districts that did pass an operating levy. But because of that, we are in jeopardy of currently taking our 55th rank in the percentile and going over the 95th percentile. We look at this policy as kind of a gotcha and a penalizing sort of position for school districts who actually are going out in good faith, having their community and raising their tax dollars, their property tax dollars, in trying to invest in their school district by the parameters that the state has given for education funding. And then we go back and say, well, now you're penalized. And in our district, it's about a quarter or three-quarters of $1 million, $750,000, when you take into consideration what the superintendent had explained, and going back and saying, you know, in a couple of years, we're probably going to lose this money because of this policy that's in place. So we speak in favor of this bill to change that policy so that school districts aren't in that position of losing revenue when you're trying to, in good faith, just keep up in maintaining programs, which this operating levy did. It's an eight-year operating levy. It's to maintain current class sizes, which some would argue are extremely high anyways, and program for 1 year. And we know next year we'll be looking at reductions anyways. So it's kind of one of these things where you're playing the game and you do have that investment from your taxpayers, and then we go back and we get penalized for it. So I would urge your support in this, and it helps both the East and the West metro areas. So we're standing in hand in hand with this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So the referendum that was passed would move you from 50th mm-hmm. up to,
we'll be up past the 95th percentile. It was a levy referendum. It was it took an existing referendum and renewed that, plus with the new cap legislation and inflationary legislation, we were able to pass that. We believe that will push us past the other districts.
Okay. Senator Saltzman, did you have a question?
Yes. I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. There's a five-letter word here. It's called equity. And this levy was originally intended many years ago to try to close the gap between, you know, the districts that had lower referendum and those that did not. This is no longer an equity revenue. This is no longer an equity levy. It has been a place to, you know, provide money to specific groups of school districts. And I think I mentioned this at a meeting once, that perhaps it's time to get rid of the equity levy and move toward really reforming our school funding formula. So in the PS Minnesota model, I don't see an equity formula. But in the meantime, I am concerned that when I look at Wayzata and I look at my school district, Stillwater, and, you know, there's a few more students in Wayzata, but I think you're at and I'm looking at the spreadsheet or the run from Senate File 368, and I'm just going off some numbers that were there. Under equity levy and referendum levy, I look at Stillwater School District 834, which gets $1.1 million in equity levy, all property tax, I look at our referendum levy, which is $8.5 million. And then I look at Wayzata, and it's $15 million in referendum levy. There's a difference of $7 million there. And that's what this equity levy, which Stillwater gets maybe another $400,000 under this spreadsheet, is all about. And so I guess I would advocate that, yes, there's an issue here. We're playing games with formulas, but rather than make it worse, I think we should try to reform the funding system. And this coming year, if we are serious about trying to look at some ongoing reform to make sure that our funding formula is more stable, and that districts don't have to play these games, that we don't start making it worse, that we try to make it better, because I'm not sure that this levy is really doing anymore what it was meant to do, and that was to close the gap. And we're playing games with formulas. And I would advocate that we all work together to make sure that school districts don't have to do this, that we know what we're going to be getting every year, that we can look at year to year. I see school districts having layoff teachers pretty soon because they don't know how much money that they may have on May 21st. So those would be my issues, that there is a difference, and that I understand it's a game, but there is a big difference between school districts, and it is in the millions of dollars.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, you also have a spread a run that on the equity revenue above the 95th percentile that is relative to this bill as well. One thing that's missing in both the run that's Mr. Nauman prepared for Senator Saltzman's bill and this one is that it doesn't show for each of these districts what their overall revenue per student is. And that's where the point that I was trying to make is that there are other kinds of add-ons. If you look at referendum, yes, many of these districts have had to rely very heavily on referendum. They don't get any equalization to speak of because of the high property values. And I was just chatting here as a reason that Moundsview can be affected by this is when you reduce the number of students for the overall value you have higher value per student, and so that puts you in the same ballgame. So property values, it's the vagaries of the interaction between our property values and the size of our student body, plus all of the complications that we have in our formula that make this so hard to grasp. We either sit here with a pain in our brain or our eyes glaze over. And I think hopefully we can, you know, I agree with Senator Saltzman that we need to revisit some of these things, and I think we have a very real opportunity to do this so that we are, in fact, recognizing, we still recognize that there are some unique needs, but we do need to get rid of things that are having some hopefully unintended consequences on districts that also have needs that may or may not be recognized in our current formula.
Okay, Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I want to speak on behalf of this bill as well, and one of the things exactly what Senator Olson was saying that's not on here is how much these districts are getting relative to other districts on a total basis, because I have seen those numbers and they're very low on the total basis. And for example, one other district, Hopkins, is in statutory operating debt and they're in the 95th percentile. So they're in statutory operating debt. Now I know they had some other issues, but all of our districts were making significant cuts, and so sometimes I think people have the perception that because these districts have been able to pass these referendums, they have so much more on a relative basis, on a per pupil basis, and that in fact that isn't the case. It's just we've done so many different things with the formula that is buried in many cases.
Mr. Oslin?
Superintendent Oslin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to emphasize that I think we do suffer in Wayzata at times from a perception that we are a high revenue, high spending district. I believe in the most recent state profile, we are 191st out of the 340 school districts in the state in revenue per pupil. We are not a high revenue, high spending district. We do have to depend more on the levy, there's no question. So I think that's – I want to make that point. I certainly do not disagree at all with Senator Saltzman on, you know, the revising the formula, and we're very supportive of the PS Minnesota initiatives and so on. But I frankly think that's probably going to take a while. I doubt if it will happen this session. I think this is legislation that can catch anybody. In fact, likely would have caught – would have trapped Stillwater had Stillwater been successful last fall with their lobby, because we were looking at districts that could bump us out of that position, and Stillwater was one of those. So it could catch anybody. It's perhaps a Band-Aid before we can revise the entire formula, but it's a needed one.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, that was me.
Oh, I see. Senator Shine.
It's soft-spoken me.
Or either the chair isn't.
I'm sorry.
His hearing isn't quite as good.
I did kind of whisper that, actually. I wanted to ask if either of you know if St. Louis Park is on or off. I mean, they've been in their group before. Where are they today?
Senator Scheid, St. Louis Park is one of the districts impacted by this, yes.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, I technically represent four school districts that wouldn't benefit by this, but I will always represent my alma mater. And, these were districts that in the 40s and 50s were levying, and passing levies, which my parents were supporting, and building outstanding schools. And now we've gone over to the other side, and I know that the Mount Sue District also has a wonderful tradition of being a very strong academic environment and program. So I do support this until we get it right, until we straighten out the formula, as Senator Saltzman has said.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think did Mr. Brad Lundell may have something to say about the subject.
I can hear the gnashing of teeth in the background.
You heard that,
Mr. Chairman. He told me he would be kind.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just think that this bill gets introduced every year just as people want me to come in and go ballistic. And I think you'll be sorely disappointed today because I've... I have a great respect for Senator Olson and a great respect for the Wayzata and Mount Sue school districts, and I want to speak more, I think, in kind of the overall view of what, I tried to do when I kind of designed this formula initially and it was adopted, and probably where it's gone. But I do want to say that I'm sympathetic to the position of those people that are going from the 94th to the 96th percentile, and there's maybe things we can do with some kind of soft landing, but I don't know if this is the way to do that. And I think that I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I think I really want to thank Senator Stump, because as this happened 2 years ago, those of us who were involved in equity 2 years ago really kind of took it in the teeth. And Senator Stump was the guy that was being dragged pillar to post and was the only person, along with the Senate, trying to really keep a mind on that gap between the high and low revenue-generating districts, at least in terms of the referendum. And part of the compromise that came about in 2005 was there was a raising of the cap, and then the grandfather districts were all given an additional $200 or access to an additional $200 in referendum levy. And I think that the difference then, the 23 to 46 difference that pales in comparison to the $200 that the grandfather districts received and the huge increase in the referendum cap, which allowed a number of districts, including some that I represent, to garner a considerable amounts of money. So I think that there's two issues here. The one is the soft landing issue, and I think that that's something I think that can do some planning. But I think that we really dull the whole concept of equity if we just all of a sudden say, well, everybody gets $46. I mean, then just throw it on the formula. I mean, it's really not an equity formula anymore, and it doesn't really match, I think, what we're talking about when talking about equity. But I do want to, one of the reasons I was late today is that, Mr. Nauman works at night, and I'm a morning person, so I was running data back in my office. And, I look at Wayzata's situation, and I look at the fact that there, when you look at the categorical distribution of the state, they're at the bottom, and so is Minnetonka. I've got districts, though, that are also at the bottom, or in the bottom 10, 15 districts, and they can't pass referenda, or they certainly can't pass them to the extent that they can pass them in other districts. I don't think the referenda, though, should be something that's used to mask weaknesses in the overall array of formulas. And I look at the categorical distribution now, and it gets greatly distorted because many of the small districts in the state get huge amounts of sparsity that's necessary. But you've got a $4,000 gap between the high and low in who's generating categoricals. And I think that, as Senator Saltzman said, you know, who's not here right now, but I think what she was saying, that we really need to look at the total formula distribution. What we've tried to do in PS Minnesota, and what I've always been a proponent of, is to drive the basic formula as high as we can do it, use the categoricals as more a rifle shot as opposed to buckshot, really look at individual district issues and solve those through the categoricals, but really drive that general edit up as high as it should be. And in that, I think we solve a lot of these problems. I guess I don't really have anything to say beyond that, except that we do need, there's probably going to always be a need for equity formula. I think that last year I came in here with cartoons and everything, and RIP equity formula with a headstone and the rest. And there's always going to have to be an equity formula simply because of the difference in property tax abilities and the difference that the referendum does cause. I think that I look at North Branch, which has on a per $100,000 of property, has a comparable tax effort to a district like Wayzata per $100,000 of property. And we can talk about differences in property and differences in income and how that plays out. But North Branch has no referendum. And they've got high taxes due to debt and the failure of the equalizing factors to keep up with inflation. And I think that you look at the formula where a district like North Branch really suffers because they can't pass a referendum. The equity formula does not address that, because districts without a referendum do not get the full benefit of the equity formula on the sliding scale. So I think we really need to take a step back here in every way, and I think looking at the equity formula differently is one of those things. Again, in just closing, I want to say I'm sympathetic to the plight of these districts, especially the districts that are flopping back and forth across the 95th percentile. I don't think this is the way to fix it. I think looking more, again, I designed something during the conference committee 2 years ago that talked about a guarantee of categorical revenue, which I think would drive up, would address this in a better way than what they're addressing this here. But simply, I don't want to go on any longer because I've got to speak on Senator Stump's bill and I'm running out of words.
Well, Mr. Chairman? Well,
don't run out of words yet.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Lundell, for being kinder, and I encourage you to keep your thinking cap on and come up with some things to resolve, some way of resolving this challenge. But I want to assure you that the people in my district are excited about raising their property tax, or have more love for the property tax than many in your districts. So to the extent that we can reduce reliance on that, you know, in my more radical moments that I would like to blow the whole system up and not have property tax because of the way that the games that we play with it. But that's not an easy challenge either. So I hope that we've convinced you that at least this bill merits being laid on the table for possible consideration in the omnibus, and I would so move.
Mr. Lundell?
Mr. Chair, I just say I'll bring the dynamite if she brings the match.
Senator Olson moves that Senate file 564, and I don't think there were any amendments as such to it, was it? Okay. That Senate file 564 be laid on the table and recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus E-12 education bill. Is there any discussion of that? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you
very
Chairman
much. And
I'm just
those
here.
Of you that came to testify. And
I don't know if we'll do it.
And next we have Senate File 297. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment that I'd like to have handed out. And as Mr. Lundell mentioned, Mr. Nauman works late into the evening and quite often is forced to put many long hours here. There are some technical corrections that we need to make in the amendment, and also... you'll hear this, I'm sure, a number of times over the years, is that we need to update it for the February forecast. And so I would ask the A1 amendment be handed out, and then we could adopt that so that that actually is part of the discussion as we go through the explanation of the bill.
So Senator Stump moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried.
Hey, Madam Chair and members, what I'd like to do is to give pick up on several of the discussion points that we've had on the previous bills, and probably the most important one that was mentioned is that. Probably the one about the match and the dynamite, but but I do think that over the last number of years, and I know a number of you have served on this committee for quite a while, and some of us for a more extended period, we have had a lot of change, and I can remember going back to Governor Perpich and just a host of changes over the years. What I think that I've seen the most dynamic change in the last, well, since about 2001. And before 2001, we had a sense of stability in our education funding. It never was perfect. There were, of course, anything we do isn't going to be perfect, but it did have a sense of stability. We kind of predicted, you know, what the inflation rate was going to be. Some people thought it was too high, too low, or whatever, but at least it was there was a stability, stable component to it. In 2001, what happened was the legislature and the governor decided that we would require a greater portion of the state's education funding to come from local decisions. And there was a saying back then is that local property taxes are a local, or property taxes are a local tax for which the state derives no benefit. Heard that over and over and over again. And to some extent that's true. When you look at city spending, you can find components of that here and there with local property taxes. But when you apply it to education funding, and especially the components of education funding that we have put in place, for example, special education, something that the local districts do not have a lot of control over. Then you also apply the referendum as a component of of how that is going to be funded, then you really do run into a lot some real problems. And I just I don't know if members have it or not, but I just want to just take a moment and look at or give you a sense of, maybe I don't have, oh, here it is, sense of if you look at the referendum levy and you look at that, how it's going up, and the runs on the 2008, FY 2008, the referendum levy is going to be about $535 million. 2009, the referendum levy is about $640 million. 2010, $719 million. And 2011, $804 million. So it gives you a sense of how rapidly that referendum is going up. One of the things that came
Senator
out,
Stumpf, is that some the numbers you're referring to, is that something the members have in their packet?
You know, I don't think it is.
Members trust Senator Stumpf.
this is some information that Mr. Nauman has put together.
Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, actually, it was something that was in your packet yesterday, and we got so swamped with bills that we never went over it. It's the tradition. It may still be in your packet if it got retained. It's a stapled copy of the three-box comparison of the general education entitlement. It's very similar to the document that Senator Anderson and, yeah, it looks very much like that. What you have in your hand is part of it.
Yes.
If it says November forecast compared to February forecast with a calculated difference, it's stapled in the upper left-hand corner.
And
that's
Mr. Chairman,
it.
We have the February.
And what you have, I think, Senator,
right.
Is the
November.
Comparison of, is February compared to this
yes.
bill
yes.
as amended?
Okay, I apologize. I'm sure we can get additional copies if members don't have it. The point that I was trying to make, though, is that we made that change, that switch in 2001, from what was a base that was stable to a base that's very much in flux. And along with the rapidly increasing referendums, we have other problems that are cropping up out there, such as we're just coming into a phase of these renewing referendums. Last year, I believe, about 37% of the referendums passed. It started out back in 2002-03. Well over the majority of them passed, 60%, 60-some percent of them. So we're coming into this period where a lot of districts are going to have to re-up those referendums if they don't want to lose the revenues. So I think it is very important that we take another look at trying to move away from referendums funding our education system and back to a more stable base. I'm not saying that this is, in fact, the bill that I'm presenting actually is also a property tax reduction bill, but we need a stabilized base and we need to increase the funding on the formula or on the general education side of our revenues.
Senator Stumpf, excuse me, Senator Olson has a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, when you refer to base, are you referring to the referendum hunk of it or the whole? Because our whole basic formula is funded by the state now. You know, even when that went in, we took over the whole formula and plus $415 of referendum. But then we are now at the point of allowing up to 26% of that to be pursued in referendum. So I'm Are you saying that our the state-funded base isn't stable, that it's in flux? Or I'm not sure I'm quite tracking with your meaning.
The formula is funded, but that's only a portion of what the revenues that districts need out there. So I'm talking about creating a more less reliance on the referendum, and a larger portion of that coming from the state. And if you look at the special education is a good example of the cross subsidies. For the most part, a lot of the school districts' referendums match up very evenly with how much they have to raise in referendums to cover those cross subsidies. Not exactly, but it's quite similar. And so you have a state responsibility to a large extent that we've kind of pushed back onto the local districts. And it's not a a very equalized system when you push it back onto the referendum. And we can talk about, we've got, you know, a number of different formulas that we just visited about the equity and so on. But what this bill does is it takes four of the levies, the operating capital levy, the transition levy, the alternative compensation levy, and equity levy, and it puts, and those four levies are basically equalized at different rates. It puts those together, and it equalizes those four levies. So we're not doing anything with the referendum at this point. What we're doing is basically taking those four levies, putting them together, and basically fully equalizing those levies. If you look at that same sheet, the operating capital, just use that as an example, goes from about $111 million up to $140 million. So as the operating capital, or as these levies grow, so do the disparity between, you know, between districts. And maybe what we could do would be to go through the explanation of the bill, what it does, and maybe Mr. Nauman, you want to?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think perhaps the easiest thing would be to start with some context for how the levies that were created beginning in the 2003 session are imposed. And I'm going to remind members that there's this chart that looks like this, and there's two sides to it. On the side with the words, it's just a brief recitation of the equity levy, which is imposed on referendum market value, equalized at $476,000 of market value per pupil. This was a all-aid program prior to the 2003 session, and then to enact some of the budget savings in 2003, it was made a combination of aid and levy. The same applies to operating capital. The same choice was made in 2003. It's imposed on adjusted net tax capacity, and this has gone from equalization at initially $22,222 of adjusted net tax capacity per pupil to an equalizing factor that's currently at $10,700. And essentially the way to think about this is the lower the number, the more levy has to be raised. Transition was a revenue line that was created during the 2003 session, also imposed on referendum market value and equalized at $476,000 of referendum market value per pupil. And then the QComp program imposed on adjusted net tax capacity at $5,900 of an equalizing factor. This began as an all-aid program for 1 year and then converted to an aid levy mix in the second year. And this was begun in the 2005 session.
So Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson.
Or Madam Chair, apology. Mr. Nauman, the adjusted net tax capacity applications then versus referendum market value do pull some categories of land back into the base for the referendum? Is that the difference between those two?
The referendum market value, Madam Chair, I apologize. The referendum market value is a different tax base that was created during the 2001 legislative session, and it excludes cabins and ag land, and we call it referendum market value primarily because it was originally designed for the referendum. But there have been...
They're not excluded in the adjusted net tax capacity. Is that what I was trying to...
Correct.
Is that correct? Mr. Nauman.
Adjusted net tax capacity does include cabins and ag land.
Yes.
And it was originally for the referendum, and then as some of the changes were made in 2003, I think the original vision was that perhaps some of that equity would get rolled on to the referendum at some point later in the process, several years down the road. The same was transition was originally designed to phase on to the to phase out, and districts would have to re-up that onto their referendum, and that provision was ultimately repealed. So there was some alliance on those two revenue levies with the referendum, and that's why those were originally selected for that.
Mm-hmm.
This is all a matter of background as a way to set the stage for the flip side, and this is a chart that the committee has seen before when we went through our briefing. It's just a reminder of how the aid levy split policy works. In general education, we have this chart that if you are district number two, for example, and you are raising $500 of revenue off of any particular revenue line, you can see that there is a relatively smaller amount of property tax and a larger amount of state aid. And if you are district number five, you are a district that has a higher amount of property value per pupil. And as a result of that, because of where we set the equalizing factor, the district would raise that same amount of revenue more on the property tax side than on the levy side, or on the correction, on the state aid side. So the further along you move to the right on that chart, the more you will raise off of levy and the less you will receive in state aid. Over time, what happens, unless the legislature elects to actually adjust the equalizing factors as we saw in Senator Salzman's bill, districts with increasing property value will move further along that line and levies will go up and state aid will go down to raise the same amount of revenue. Does that set the stage appropriately, Senator Stump?
Yes.
Senator Stump.
What the bill you have before you does a number of things, and now is probably the best way to talk about it in just a general term, and then we'll go, and then I'd go through the language. The first thing that the bill does is take the numerical value of the levies that are currently imposed in taxes payable 2008, that's fiscal 09, and then proceeds through the end of the projection period, accumulates those levies so that it is raising the exact amount of levy that the levies under the current projection, those four levies that Senator Stump identified, on a statewide basis, we're collecting the exact same amount. And then it imposes that levy. Rather than doing it on an equalizing factor, it tells the department to collect that same amount of revenue, or levy rather, and impose it at an equal rate across all districts. So all districts are mounting the same tax effort. Questions on that notion?
Yeah. Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chairman, so it's changing. I'm not clear yet. It's changing, so we won't have two on referendum market value and two on adjusted net capacity. They will all be calculated on what?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, you got me doing it. Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I think we might be mixing concepts here. The direct answer to your question is that this new levy is imposed on adjusted net tax capacity. However, the point that I was trying to make is that what we're dealing with is two distinct concepts of how a levy is raised. Under the current system, we have four separate levies that were created as part of the budget reductions in 2003 and five later, and they're imposed with equalizing factors, so that the higher value your property is, the more you raise on the levy side. And it doesn't matter. We could do this on referendum market value if that was the committee's pleasure. But the higher the higher property value you have, the more you raise in levy and the less you get in aid. So as the district grows, it moves gradually off the formula. Instead, what this bill does is lock in a dollar amount and say, this number is the amount that we will collect statewide, impose that number as an equal rate across all school districts. And so once you move in the language of the bill, and we'll get to this section in a moment, past 2012 and later, we have locked in a total dollar amount, and the balance will be made up in state aid. So what you won't have is an occasion in the future where a district's property wealth will dictate, and you'll be moving into higher levy categories than you were at under the way the system works right now. In other words, as you move along this, moving along this chart and increasing property values will not increase your levy. You will stay locked in unless the legislature chooses to raise the amount that's locked in the bill.
So, Madam Chair and Mr.
Senator Nolan,
Wilson. I'm trying to sort out, and I'm not there yet, but what the various ramifications of this are. The first one that it's easy to see is that the cabins and the ag land people will be carrying more of the load just by virtue of that change. But then when you divide it up, what's not going to be clear is the relative burden of these different levies on districts, and when you spread that, divide it equally across the state, where that there's a shift that's going to go on, and I'm not sure where that shift is going to go. Some districts aren't in alternative compensation, so if you're going to divide that up, are we ridding ourselves of the alternative compensation? Is this kind of undue QCOM? That's one question that I see. Is that a consequence? And also, where, you know, who's going to pick up the tab then for things that that have or have not been used or done in these?
Mr.
Is
Chairman,
that convoluted enough of a question?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think there's about six questions in there. And what you've sat on this committee for a number of years and understand the complexity of these things. I think what I'd like to do, because there are so many questions in there, I had sort of thought about what I had hoped was a logical process of going through some of these. Certainly there are issues about coming to an average, whereas some districts right now are mounting higher tax efforts simply because they get revenue off of all four of these line items as opposed to maybe just one. There's also there would also be differences in tax effort because a district might be a high levy district because they're on the wealthier side per pupil than another district. And we've got some data runs. What I've asked the committee administrators to do is to hold off on those so that we can go through the concepts. You know, it's always my position that the downfall of Western civilization is the data run. So I'm setting that aside for a few moments. If we can go through the language and try to deal with the broad concept, and then we can. I know that you're going to want to take a look at the runs, and we've got two runs that deal with both tax effort as well as some of the distributions on how the changes would work.
Mr. Nelman. Question, and I have studied the bill, so I apologize that I still have a lot more questions. But with regard, before we go on, if we spread these four levies out among all districts, if a district previously wasn't getting some of these categories of levy, and now we're going to spread out among all districts, will they have access to that money that they previously didn't even get, or does it still only go to the districts that had those levies?
Madam Chairman, this bill I should emphasize, is an aid levy mix bill. It deals solely with the amount of aid that's raised and the amount of levy that's the amount of aid that a district receives and the amount of levy that a district has to raise to generate general education revenue. It, so to the point of your question, if a district hypothetically was receiving no revenue off of transition equity on and this is a big hypothetical because every district is going to get one of these line items because everyone gets operating capital or transition or QCOMP revenue, under your hypothetical, this would not address that question because all that would say is that all we're doing is dealing with the aid levy mix. We're not dealing with a revenue question. Have I confused you further?
Mr. Nelman, yet if the amount was spread out equally among all at an equal tax rate, that district still might then be contributing, but you're saying they might have anyway been contributing.
Under the current law, we make aid levy calculations on transition, on QCOMP, on operating capital, and on equity as distinct items within general education. Under the language of the bill, we will not make those individual calculations anymore. What we will do is calculate a total general education revenue amount, and then we will impose a calculation on that total at an even rate across all districts that generates an equal tax effort by every school district in the state.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Nelman, would it have the same effect if you applied all of these to the same base and applied the same equalizing factor?
Mr. Nelman.
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf.
Sorry.
Senator Olson, I think I'm getting at your question. You could impose an equalizing factor like this after making all the calculations. Is that what you're asking?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to I should let you go ahead and explain the whole bill, and maybe I'll have it clear. But if you were to take these separately, apply them against the same base, we obviously have two different bases, and they have two different equalizing factors. I mean, they have different equalizing factors. Actually, there's three. If you applied the same equalizing factor, would that have the same result as what the bill does? But you're just combining...
It would not. Maybe this would be a good opportunity to go through the bill and recognizing that there has been an amendment added. So Section 1 that you now see in the bill is no longer in the bill. There was some technical language that I thought might be necessary, but upon further reflection, we deleted. Section 2 of the bill sets the operating capital levy at current law for fiscal years 2007 and 2008 only. And the reason that that is being done is that in effective in fiscal year 2009, when we get to the repealer, this section will be repealed from law. So we will no longer make a distinct aid levy calculation on the operating capital line. And that's also why we make a We under Section 3, we change the calculations for operating capital, limiting it to just 07 and 08. Again, this doesn't change the amount of revenue that a school district would receive from operating capital, but instead just sets that current law calculation for just two more for the current year and one more year. And the reason for the waiting until 09 is that, of course, there's always a lag whenever you're trying to do anything on the levies. So we're looking at an 09 effective date for all of this. Section 4 deals with the equity. Section 4 and 5 deal with equity, aid, and levy. And again, the same logic would apply. We're using current law calculations for just 2007 and 2008. And then those sections, when we get to the repealer, will be repealed. And again, I'm beginning to sound like a broken record. Section 6 and Section 7 make those same limitations on the transition program. Um, The QComp program is dealt with in substantively the same manner, but because the QComp program has another permutation, there's a little bit of a wrinkle to it. Under current laws, a school district can elect to, if approved into the QComp program, can elect to receive the basic aid, which is roughly about $190 per pupil. If they want to receive the additional amount that brings them up to a total revenue of $260 per pupil, they have to agree to an aid levy split calculation. So the districts are this circumstance created an additional wrinkle in that the author felt that it was important to not reward school districts that had under current law chosen not to make that additional levy, but instead limit to the 190. So that those districts would continue to get the 190. But if you're a district that is under current law already levying and making the aid levy split calculations to get yourself up to the 260, that levy component would be bought out. And so that is some of the process here. Section 8 of the bill sets, and I should quickly add that the language on 3.19 and 3.23 has been moved to another section of the bill under the amendment as a technical matter. Thank you. The levy in Section 9 is limited to 7 and 8. The aid in Section 10 is limited to fiscal 7 and 8. And then in order to buy out the levy, there are two sections, Sections 11 and 12. Section 12 creates a definition of alternative teacher compensation revenue, which we didn't really have previously. Section 11 buys out that portion of the levy that was in that I spoke of for those districts that wanted that extra amount that brought them up to the full 260. And that deals with the issues inside the general education program in terms of those levies that are in question, and limits their levy and aid calculations as distinct items for fiscal year 7 and 8. And then again, I know I'm repeating myself, but I'm emphasizing that those sections will be repealed at the very end of the bill. Now we move into the final calculations, which at the end of the total general education calculations, we have what's called a consolidated tax rate. And the amendment does change some of these numbers. We are updating for the February forecast. And the numbers, I'm looking at the amendment now, line 1.10 through 1.12 adjusts the numbers that show up in the bill. The numbers that showed up in the bill based on the November forecast were levy neutral. In other words, those four levies under current law, if you totaled them up under the November forecast, raised $244.9 million on a statewide basis. So the bill replaces and raises that amount in total at the exact same amount, so it is neutral on a statewide basis. In other words, it doesn't cost anything. The amendment that Senator Stumpf offered and was put on the bill makes that change, but then it also reduces the levy down to $155 million, which once you adjust for the February forecast, reduces overall levies on a statewide basis by $83.3 million.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
What happened in the forecast that allows you to do that, or does this change? Explain that a bit.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I may have confused matters. I'm suggesting that there were two things that happened that generated the number changes on line 1.10 through 1.12 in the amendment. The first, which you don't actually see because it happens all at once, is an adjustment for the levy changes in the February forecast, and that number would be $83 million higher than the new number. What I am suggesting is that instead of just having it be levy neutral, across the state that the language of the amendment does two things. It corrals all the levies into a single place, imposes them at a rate, but then it also reduces levies by $83 million. So this bill now contains a levy savings.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I still don't understand why.
Senator Rolls.
Madam Chair, it's the rate that raises substantially less amount of dollars, but yet we had slightly less revenue in the state in this forecast, not much different. So is this affecting the overall revenue generated by this?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson,
gave us an opportunity to reduce property taxes?
No. Madam Chair and Senator Olson, think about it as a two-step process, which, with your indulgence, you don't see the numbers actually in front of you. See the 155,059 on the amendment? That's the new number that would show up that on line 4.28.
Mm-hmm. I got it in there.
Okay. And I'm suggesting is that there are two reasons that we had that the number changed. The first is that the 244,937 that appears in the bill is a February forecast number that represents the total levies for equity, operating capital, QComp, and transition. The first step to update the bill from when it was introduced was to adjust for the February forecast. We needed to come up with new numbers.
But Mr. Chairman, you said February forecast for both. Do you mean in the first statement you meant the November forecast?
I'm sorry. We needed to update for the February forecast.
The previous, the 244, was the November forecast.
Correct.
Okay.
But that number you don't see. In other words, we're not changing it from 244 to something a little lower because some of the levies went down. Instead, the author of the bill chose to spend some money to the tune of about $75 million on an appropriations basis, which results in a change from that's what substantially reduces.
Oh, okay.
So this bill would now spend $75 million on an appropriation basis to achieve $83 million of levy savings off of the total statewide levies in general education.
Okay, so Madam Chair,
Senator
Mr. Nowlin, so these changes are not driven solely by the forecast, but by a change in actually investing some more money in aid in order to lower property tax.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, that's correct. And I think, members shouldn't get confused about it. I mean, we've heard bills on trying to do something with the debt service equalization. We heard bills on trying to, one of the issues around here is how can we lower some property taxes out there? And this is that component of it does that. And the February forecast is something that the fiscal people have to do just to be, keep everything accurate. So there's really two things, and we shouldn't confuse them. The decision was I've been visiting with Senator Bach and on the tax committee, and obviously one of their ideas is to try to lower property taxes as well.
So, Senator Olson.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Stump, that $75 million, is going into funding some of these activities, or is it where are you putting the $75 million that is, in fact, buying down the levy?
Madam Chair,
Senator Stump.
The $75 million is going into reducing property tax levies in those four levy areas.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, so you have a plan for how that's distributed among districts in the $75
million?
I mean, if it's reducing it, there's a mechanism. I'm trying to get at what mechanism.
What the mechanism is? Maybe Mr. Nauman can
Madam Chair,
Senator
Olson, Senator Stumpf, and committee members, again, the process is to take the numerical value of the four levies that were currently imposed with equalizing factors, and what we traditionally talk about is equalization. Take that total levy, put it into a single place at the end of the calculations of general education. So you end up with a number in the bill right now, and you see that number is 155. Hypothetically, if it were the committee's pleasure and we had a sufficient target, you could choose to buy them all out, and you would reduce that 155 down to zero. So it's not as if it goes to a single line item. The policy incumbent in the bill is, regardless of where a district receives revenue off of within general education, be it compensatory sparsity, transition equity, right now, a district that receives equity, transition, and Q-comp would be doing levy on those. But if a district that is receives none of those, hypothetically, but is doing compensatory, receives a compensatory and sparsity, would be a low levy district. So the point is not speaking to where general education revenue comes from on the various line items. It is instead imposing a levy initially under the first draft of the bill at a net zero rate, but imposing that by district at a uniform rate across all districts. Then the bill comes in and reduces property taxes to a lower amount.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Mr. Nauman, when it comes in to reduce them to a lower amount, is that on an equity basis? Or have we kind of gotten rid of that?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, what we haven't gotten to is where that rate actually gets calculated. Because that number goes down, it would go down for all districts. And we'll get to the distributions in just a moment.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, I may need a special tutorial. I apologize to the rest of the members if they have got this all under control and I'm missing.
Senator Olson, I think you're just representing the members' confusion.
Madam Chair and members, perhaps for members that sat on this committee in 2005, this may look a little familiar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is exactly what the K-12 bill coming out of the Senate included in 2005. It was corralling the levies into one place and imposing them at a uniform rate across all districts. Maybe it would be helpful maybe it will be confusing, but I'd like to move to the remaining sections of the bill.
Please, Mr.
Section 14 is where the department is direct, or not the department, but a district. Under Section 14, the actual consolidated levy is imposed. So this is where, after calculating the total revenue for general education, the levy is subtracted off and imposed at a uniform rate. You see an amount not to exceed the consolidated tax rate, and that tax rate is generated by directions to the department under Section 13. I don't think we talked fully about those details. And then in the hypothetical occasion where a district would be off the formula, in other words, their tax base was sufficiently high, and this does not happen, but it's just a protection for the eventuality if it were to happen. If a district were to impose that rate that was generated under the previous two sections and it exceeded the amount of general education revenue that the district was eligible for under the general education program, this section simply says those districts, the actual levy of that district is reduced to only be the amount that the formulas in general education would generate. This is similar to the old calculations that were done in the general education levy prior to 2001. Section 16 is new calculations for how the general education levy, the general education aid would be calculated, because we no longer have distinct operating capital equity transition and Q-comp. aid levy splits, we need to adjust that language. And then finally, we end up at the repealer, and as I promised earlier in this discussion, subdivisions 13A, B, 13A and B, 29, 30, 31, 30, 32, 33, 35, and 36 are repealed effective for fiscal year 2009. And the repealers are shown on the last couple of pages. This might be a good time to hand out those runs. Mr. Chair, is it?
Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, thank you. Yeah, I think it would be a good time to hand out distribution of the runs. I think I think the bill is very straightforward. The one component that didn't get mentioned is that when all this gets done, and Senator Olson was correct on this, that there is a difference between districts, and because of the differences in taking these levies and the differences in tax bases and et cetera, that's why it works well if you can reduce the levies at the same time. And so you'll, as Mr. Nauman explains goes through the data or the runs, you'll see a fluctuation in the property tax relief that this bill generates. But I think it's a very straightforward attempt at simplifying, I think, a lot of the complexity that we heard in some of the previous bills. So, Mr. Nolan.
So, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to call your attention to the legal size document that looks like this. I think most of you have that one, but there's also a portrait, an 8.5 by 11 size, and I want to do the legal one first. The first grouping of data is the levies under current law for, again, fiscal year 2009. So you see that there are levies for equity, levies for operating capital, levies for transition, levies for alternative compensation, and then there's an unsolidated, it's supposed to be consolidated levy. Need to broaden the columns a little. And then it generates a total gen ed levies under current law, and the total under the February forecast is $238.3 million on a statewide basis. Members are with me on that?
Mm-hmm.
So a district like Aitken, the very first line, is raising $294 off of equity, $302.7 off of operating capital. Their transition levy is $58, and you end up with a total of $565,000. I hope that part is clear. That's just where the levies are under current law. Then as you move to the proposal, again, in fiscal year 2009, those levies as distinct calculations within the confines of general education are no longer there. Though technically, those turn into all aid programs, equity, gone, operating capital, transition, alternative compensation. And then at the end of the calculations for general education, a consolidated levy is imposed. And you'll see that instead of raising $238,000, which would have been the net zero levy at the February forecast, levies are reduced by $83 million, and it's imposed at $155 million on a statewide basis. Then the next column, total gen ed levy differences under from the bill. And you see the total is $83 million, and you can see the levy differences. So, again, Aitken, our first example, levies go down under the bill as amended by $168,000. If you skip down a couple lines, you'll notice there are a few districts that fall into this circumstance, even with the buyout. I believe it's McGregor. Their levy under current law was $179,000, but under the proposal, their levy goes up to $258.2 million.
A thousand. That might put them in SOD.
That might create some problems, Mr. Chairman. And so in an effort to try to explain why some of that happens, and this is a very crude analysis, but it was, I thought, at least useful to think about. If you move to the next set of data, it's on the, I'm sorry, I thought that had been handed out.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Senator Stumpf, if I didn't know you better, I would think that you were selectively picking on me, since one of the highest net increase of general ed levy is in the district I live in.
The two that
are wholly within my district are most negatively affected by this, property tax-wise. We have increase in property tax.
Senator Olson, what district number are you referring to?
I'm referring to 276 and 277. Last column.
That's not actually correct, Senator.
It goes down on over
277.
Madam Chair, school district number
277.
277, 278. I apologize.
Yeah. Yes, and it might be helpful to actually see on that page as we move to the next, so that as a matter of background to think about why that might be happening. So if you take the next data run, the smaller of the two, we have laid in pupil counts, then adjusted net tax capacities, and referendum market value. And again, you see the $238 million on a statewide basis. That represents...
Excuse me, Mr. Nolan, do you have...
Senator Stump?
I don't think I have that. I either left it back there, and I... are there some extra copies?
No. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, you see the total current law general education levies, the 238, those numbers tie directly to the previous data run. Members are with me on that. And with apologies to my graduate school advisor, what we have done is a fairly simplistic analysis that divides the total current law gen ed levies by the adjusted net tax capacity and then multiplies the number by 100, so we get something that is doesn't have too many zeros in front of it. But what you're looking at there for Aiken first is a 3.17 number, and essentially it's how much levy per adjusted net tax capacity is occurring in the district. We
under current law. Okay.
So what I recognize, obviously, is that there are some levies that are imposed on referendum market value and some levies that are imposed on ANTC. But what I was trying for was a proxy to give you some sense of why a district would have a potential, under the language of the bill, have a levy increase as opposed to levy savings under the bill. And you'll notice that this rough measurement of tax effort by district, you have Aiken at 3.17. Moving down the page, I think it's Reamer that's 0.91. And I think, Senator Olson, given that you had the interest in West Tonka and Orno, you'll notice that the tax effort in West Tonka was 1.76 and 2.04. Then moving two columns to the right, Senate File 297 as amended, again on the first page, you now see the 155 total levy imposed on adjusted net tax capacity. So that this division calculation makes a touch more sense in an academic sense when we make that kind of division. Now the tax effort is uniform across all districts. So A district like Aiken is doing 2.36, Minneapolis 2.36. It is the same tax effort. So a district that was below the 2.36 would have to do some levying to come up to the uniform number. A district that was over the 2.36 would be coming down to that number.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Senator Stumpf and others, now you understand why, well, you don't understand yet, but when I get done, I hope you will, why the property tax is so hated. Because in the West Tonka District, the property values have gone very high, especially when you get somebody that comes along. Well, let's see. How much did Jimmy Jam sell his house for? He probably had to come down. He was trying for at least $19 million. But you have all of the neighbors when you for sales value. You have the neighbors' property values going up. People that have lived there for years, and all of a sudden they've got these values that the tax assessor is using. Whether they want to sell or not, which usually they don't, or even if they did, they may or may not get that money, but it will affect them until something goes along to drive it down. So these folks who are paying through the nose in taxes, and it looks like a low rate, does not match the style of folks that are there. And that's why even this is actually shifting and making matters worse. And that these two districts, I think Wayzata has got the reputation, but they have actually probably a broader mix of housing and property values than an area that like West Tonka and Orono that have a huge amount of Lake Minnetonka Lakeshore, which has just gone off the charts. And it has a great deal of effect on people who happen to live there. And yes, they may benefit on paper, but it's not something they can take to the bank and pay their taxes with. And because they don't have do not necessarily have the income that matches that. That's why, the movement to general education revenue to bring back the property tax into that instead of the state taking it over is to me problematic. That's a little microcosm of it. There's some that are affected. There were some huge numbers, and I'm not sure that Campbell Tinta and some of those other kinds of things. But that's just an illustration of why the property tax is such an egregious thing. It's affecting us now. Your day may come. And that's what people sometimes live in fear of, especially if they get caught, like right now, when the taxes are high. And they might like to sell, and the housing market has gone out, tanked. They don't have a choice, and so you're having people that are struggling just to hang on and not lose their equity in order to keep it going.
Madam Chair and
Senator Stumpf, and then Senator Bergen.
And I would agree that the property tax system has its problems, but if you look at the current system, and I'll just use operating capital. The operating capital is going, the property taxes are going up, and districts are falling off completely. And so, it's not a question of if we do not do something, we still got the problem.
No.
Senator Osteen, this morning I was talking to him, and he says, as a school board member, they went out and sold a school bond to build some buildings, and the state was going to participate for 70%, and now the state's got 0%.
Yep.
At least under this legislation, we're locking in a definite number. And I realize that there's some shifting, and that's what we've been trying to accommodate with some property tax reductions at the same time mitigate that.
So, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Olson.
Madam Chair, and Senator Stumpf, what's difficult now that people on education can't be on taxes at the same time because there is such an intertwining here. That's where what the tax committee does in terms of property tax relief. This would not be so bad, even in a district like this,
for the guy that came in and is paying $6 or $7 million for a house, they obviously, if they can pay that, they ought to be able to afford to pay the taxes on it. But for the ones who are there needs to be at the very least a very good circuit breaker that's income related, and that's why property tax relief, if we're going to continue with this kind of a pattern, it needs an individual, not, you know, giving local government aid, trying to buy down the costs of the local government. It needs to help those individuals, because whatever we do with our formulas is going to catch these people where their values have gone crazy. And I think you're finding it up, and some of the other districts that are affected are the ones that are getting up toward your part of the world, where people are coming in on these lakeshores, and they're paying huge amounts and building houses and sucking everybody else into that increased value, and how do you deal with it? So at least I got misery loves company. I'm glad to have some company. I won't claim misery just yet, but we've got to stick together, right?
Okay, Senator Wergen.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I want to add to your company in the misery part here. You skipped right over my district because, see, Senator Saxhog borders me to the north.
Yes.
But let me tell you a little bit about my district and why this doesn't always work very well. In my district, because of some of the things you're talking about, the escalated housing market and property tax increases because of some of the market values and stuff, in my district, the cost of living is 1% below the metro cost of living. Okay, only 1% below the metro cost of living. But the average wage is 33% below the average wage in the metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to pay this stuff too. So we're 33% below you in income, but only 1% below you in cost of living.
On average.
It gets pretty tough.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, and these runs are based on your having $75 million to buy down the impact of what your initial proposal is. Do you know that is that assured, or should we be seeing your runs without that as an option too?
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf. And Senator Olson and committee members, no, I've been working closely with Senator Bach to, and obviously one of his goals is to reduce property taxes too. I think that's assured. I mean, that we would have that property tax reduction.
Madam Chair, where is it coming from? I mean, is it? Tax increases or reshifting within what we have to work with?
I know the discussion is still going on exact targets and stuff, but that is, I think, plugged into part of it.
Thank you.
Senator Olson. Oh, Senator Wergen.
Madam Chair, I have at least as many questions as Senator Olson, but I won't ask them all because it's time to go to session. But I do have to ask this one. Senator Stump, in your district, my district, Senator Saxhog district, in using the adjusted net tax capacity for the calculation, there have been some real complications. I would suggest we look at if that's the best place to base the changes is on the adjusted net tax capacity. That's not always the best measurement to use for some of the changes. So please look at how that has an effect in some of the anomaly districts.
Madam Chair and Senator Wergen, could you expand on that?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Stump, in any district that has a maximum effort levy by using the adjusted net tax capacity to calculate paybacks and things like that, it has created a scenario where the payback has gone exponentially high, even though there's no greater income. It's based because limited market value comes into play, green acres comes into play, all those things come into the adjusted net tax capacity. It has placed an overburden on some properties and created a greater payback on the maximum effort levy districts, especially 21, and you have a couple of them.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if we could hear from Mr. Lundell just a few minutes.
Mr. Lindell.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's four bills today, and I've been up here for every one. I guess if I were a superhero, my power would be to suck all the air out of the room. So it's both from there. I really want to applaud Senator Stump for starting movement down a path that I think we need to go. In PS Minnesota, we've talked about creating a solid base, bringing some kind of stability back into the formula. Obviously, as Senator Olson and Senator Wergen have talked, there are some bugs here that need to be worked out, but I think that every journey begins with a single step. I think that there are some things here since the 2001 buy-down, which I still look back upon now as just being one of the most dramatically negative effects, negative actions that probably the legislature took overall. Because what we've seen in the meantime as coming back, starting in 2003, we already saw the general the capital went from all aid to aid levy. And that equalizing factor has moved down even further, so we're seeing more levy. And so we're seeing and then as Senator Stump talked about the referendum coming back in, we're seeing the property tax come back into the system. In fact, we're seeing without any changes this year, if we let property taxes rise, we probably would exceed in pay 2008 or pay 2009 where we were in pay 2001. So the property tax is back amongst us, and it's back in every school district. It's just back in a very arbitrary manner. And I think if we're going to have a solid, stable base for funding, we need to have that, you know, be more uniform. And I think Senator Stump is starting us down that direction. Again, there's the bill isn't perfect, but I think it's a good start. I think one section Section 15 with the recapture or the districts off the formula, even though that doesn't affect anyone at this point. Let me just say, from my days on staff 20 years ago, I've seen grown men cry over this provision, and it's a red flag that probably, if it doesn't need to be there, I would suggest that it probably should be removed. But I do want to applaud Senator Stump. He's starting down the right direction. I think that, you know, again, we need to get stable base back in the system, and let's, again, where we can help with that to work out the bugs. I think Senator Wergen makes very good points about using the right base, and I think in PS Minnesota, one of the things we're trying to do is figure out what is the right base. Is the referendum market value the right base, ANTC, limited market value, how we deal with the sales ratio study, all those things should be on the table when we talk about getting to the right property base for calculating our levies. So with that, I stand for any questions.
And Senator Stump, there are members in the audience who have let us know that they do want to testify. I believe, I don't know if it's in support or in opposition. How do you want to handle that with regard to session?
We have session.
No.
Take a couple.
I guess I don't know. I session is at 11.
Yes. Yes. Do you want
to? It's a short session.
I'm sure we'll be coming back to this. I mean, it's not something
it's
that's
laying it over.
Make sure they can come back.
Is there anybody that can come back?
Can you identify yourself if you were looking to speak, and we can find out what.
I didn't have anybody, except Mr. Lindell.
So the chamber and back there, Sam and Scott. They can come back.
We'll get the discussion going.
Thank you very much, Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, I just laid the bill on the table.
So the bill's the bill's been laid on the table.
You got to take the vote.
Those in favor? Is that what you're doing, or you're just laying it on the table?
I just lay it on the table, and then we'll be coming back to it because I know there's people who would like to testify, and I'm sure committee members have more questions and everything. So. We'll have to just put it on the agenda again.
Thank you, Senator Stump.
Put him in the save.
So, members, please take your documents and put it in your save folder so we will come back to this.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.